This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
Appreciate everybody being on board today on radio and television, and we still have stuff to do, Mr. Durham, including a visit with Andrea Adelson.
Yep, we start the 8 o'clock hour live in Central Florida with Andrea Adelson. Good morning, Andrea. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I'm great. Good to talk to you again.
All right. Let's you want to start with last Friday first, Pack? We think we should go there. Should we talk about Andrea's lack of snow in Central Florida
We'll get to the snow part later, but let's get to the business at hand. And that's Commissioner Jim Phillips meeting with the media on Friday. And Andrea, people are still buzzing about what he had to say and the ACC stance as far as not only the college football playoff expansion, but really the big picture in college athletics.
Well, the reason people are buzzing is because no other commissioner has been as forceful as Jim Phillips about the stance against expansion right this second. And when he started to lay out the points inside the ACC, and again, he is taking the stance that the presidents, athletic directors, and the folks inside the ACC want him to take, they all made sense. Essentially, this is a huge turning point for collegiate athletics when you're looking at all the changes that have already been made, the changes that are to come within the NCAA structure and framework, NIL, transfer portal, so many issues inside college football, that the ACC prefers a 365-day look at college football to make sure that they've got the foundation laid right before they sit here and start rushing into expansion in the final 2 years of this contract. And that's the complicating factor here, guys. Look, the ACC knows that there's going to be expansion in the next contract. What they're talking about right now is trying to get expansion in the final 2 years of the current deal. And in order for that to happen, there has to be unanimous agreement for there to be expansion in those last 2 years. To get expansion in the new contract, they don't need unanimous agreement. And so from Jim Phillips and the ACC perspective, they keep asking, why are we rushing to get something done for the last 2 years of this contract when we have so many other pressing issues that we should be focusing on right now?
Andrea, there's two schools of thought here. One, there's the school of people who want to see the college football playoff expand immediately, as soon as possible, because they think it'll mean more compelling games, and probably so. But there's also this thought that the ACC is being somehow siloed as not in favor of expansion. I think Jim Phillips has never said he's not in favor of expansion, that his conference isn't in favor of expansion. What he's saying is, and he said it in a basement with Mark and I in December, and he said it, I think, the other day on the call, you'd have to confirm this, we got to get this right. And there are a lot of other things that will help us if we expand, if we get it right before we expand.
Right. The key phrase is, we don't believe now is the right time for expansion. He's not ruling out expansion. And he knows, along with everybody else, that expansion is coming. The question is, when is the right time to do it? And from the ACC's perspective, because there are so many other pressing issues that need to be addressed, they don't think right now, right this second, is the right time to go ahead and vote for something when there is so much remaining that has to be answered. In addition to everything else I just mentioned, health and safety of the players is at the forefront of Jim Phillips' mind. Multiple times he mentioned on this call, in conversations with Dabo Swinney, in feedback that they received from Clemson players, in conversations with Mario Cristobal, now the Miami coach, the coaches are concerned with health and safety in terms of length of the season. How many games now are players going to be asked? And last summer, both Clemson players and North Carolina players publicly stated, we don't want to play 17 games. We don't know how this is going to work. Clemson players said, look, 15 was enough for us in the current structure. And that's something that Jim Phillips has top of mind as well, in addition to what is the bowl framework going to look like? How are the buys going to work? What are the first and second round sites going to be? Revenue distribution. There's so many unanswered questions here, plus everything else that's going on with the NCAA. Again, the key phrase is not ready to expand right now, that they want these questions to be addressed before they rush into anything. And it's only for the final 2 years of the contract.
Andrea, I loved the fact that Jim Phillips brought up the conversations he's had with players and coaches, because when all that went down last year, I thought it was, everybody was in the mood to talk football, the upcoming season, who's going to win the division, who's going to be in the Final Four, you know, all that takes place. But I was worried that when the Clemson players in particular, since they've experienced, the North Carolina guys said it too, but the Clemson guys walked it and talked it. When they made the comment that, hey, 15 was plenty, I was worried that that was just going to be, hey, they said something, that's cool, we'll put that on the back burner and not worry about it. But the fact that Jim Phillips on Friday brought that up, I thought was really important, because I was worried that guys who've experienced it, and like you, I've walked through that locker room on both the winning and the losing side after that national championship game, and both teams are literally physically exhausted. I mean, this is not the National Football League, right? Those are professional athletes. While there are some on these teams, it's not an entire roster made up of them. And so I thought it was great that Jim Phillips brought up the fact that, you know what, players are telling me that 15 was enough, and he is bringing that to the forefront, because I was concerned that that was discussed last summer and completely lost and forgotten about. But I think it's great that Phillips brought it up. I really do. I think it's really, really important.
Pack, I remember talking with you and Wes over the summer about why there were no players who were involved in the expansion talks. Right. It's just the commissioners, right? But the players ultimately are the ones who are going to have to run through this gamut. And it's not as if they're going to start taking away games in order to get an expanded playoff, right? That is not even a question, because you take away games, you're losing money. Well, you can't lose money. You got to make money, which is another driving factor when it comes to expansion. But the players are the ones who are going to have to deal with it on the back end of it. And I know there's talk about, well, if we have an expanded playoff, then fewer players will be opting out. Well, I mean, look, the player safety issue is one that absolutely must be addressed. And Jim is not alone in that room on that topic. I can tell you that I had conversations with Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren last week in Indianapolis, and he essentially echoed a lot of what Jim said, just not as forcefully as Jim did. He said, look, we have to be deliberate in our discussions, and the health and safety of the players have to come first. So it's Jim and Kevin Warren who are sitting here and saying, well, what about the players? While the other ones want to just put the pedal to the metal, full throttle ahead, and say, let's go with 12 without thinking about what do our players want and care about. And I think that's a disservice to the players, quite honestly, because those players should have a seat in the room during these discussions. And one of the flaws with this process was the way that the expanded format was announced in June with a four-member subcommittee without having the other power commissioners or all the commissioners take a look at it first. Because Jim Phillips was told, look, once I received this, I needed to take it to my people in the ACC. That means athletic directors, university presidents, and players. The coaches took it to the players. And a lot of the players said, we don't want 12. We don't want to play more games. Now, I'm not saying that was a unanimous opinion from every single player inside the ACC. I'm just saying that the folks who have gone through it or who had an opportunity to go through it said, we have enough. 15 is enough. And Jim Phillips really took that seriously and said, I can't sit here and start voting against what the people in my conference want just because I'm feeling pressure from other commissioners who are in the room. So that's one of the big reasons why he has sat here and said, look, why are we rushing into this? We have other people that we need to talk to and other concerns that have to be addressed. And those players' concerns are at the top of his mind. There's no question about that.
Well, and his legacy as an athletics director, Andrea, and you know this, be it at Northwestern or any place else, his legacy as an athletics director is also becoming his legacy as a commissioner, and that is student athletes are at the forefront of everything he does. That's what his thing has always been, be it at Evanston or, when he was at Northern Illinois briefly, those kinds of things. Student athletes have always been at the front. I want to follow up on that particular piece. Darren Rencher was with us yesterday. We asked him about it, and he said, well, you know, the expansion is one thing. Maybe we could get rid of a couple games. You know, maybe we could get rid of a couple, the FCS game or the lower level non-conference game. I mean, he understands the value of the game, certainly, and sees it from all perspectives. I don't think that's an option either. The championship game, everybody talks about the conference championship games. That's not an option. That won't be an option that would leave that room in Indianapolis last week. Which brings me to this question. Can you draw lines in the room? I mean, I'm going to guess that the Pac-12, the Big Ten, and the ACC, the alliance, so to speak, would be on one side. I'm guessing that maybe Greg Sankey and, I don't know, the Big 12 with Bob Bowlesby, despite their whatever detente they have staged after Texas and Oklahoma, would be on another side. Can you figure out kind of where other people stand in that room? Where do we, if we got to counting votes, what would it look like, I guess?
Well, essentially, it's the Big Ten and the ACC who have said, we need to sit here and study this and look at this a little bit more than the time that we have allotted to be able to get to expansion in the final 2 years of the contract. I think the Pac-12 is aligned with them in some respects, but you look at the statement that their commissioner put out last week, and it essentially says, we're up for any expanded model because they know they need expansion in order to help their conference get into the playoff. The SEC and the Big 12 are aligned. Greg Sankey and Bob Bowlesby, they were in the room coming up with this format. So was Mountain West Commissioner Craig Thompson and Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick. And even though Notre Dame made some concessions in this format, this is a great deal for Notre Dame because they don't have to finish in the top four or go undefeated to be able to make it into the playoffs. So they know that the 12 team format is also beneficial for them. And you look at the other group of five conferences, well, obviously the 12-team format is beneficial to them. So from my perspective, based on the comments that I've read and the interviews that I've done talking to Kevin Warren and hearing from Bob Bowlesby and Greg Sankey last week in Indianapolis, obviously the call with Jim Phillips, I really think it's the Big Ten and the ACC who want to be much more deliberative about this. And Kevin Warren told me, look, we're making a decision that is going to affect this game for years down the line, okay? We can't rush into it. We can't sit here and say it has to be done right this second. And I asked him, well, do you feel a sense of urgency to get something done right now? Are you frustrated with the process? And he's like, I'm never frustrated, and I don't really feel a sense of urgency right now because there are questions that my conference wants answered, just like there are questions the ACC wants answered. And sorry for the flying earring just there, fellas.
you know, with all that said, Andrew, these are the smartest, brightest people in college athletics in the room. I want to emphasize that before people start, you know, pointing fingers and all that stuff. These are, without question, as far as leadership, power, understanding the lay of the land, this is the best group we got. And so I think eventually they will get this problem solved. The question will become when. But as we sit here today on January the 18th, to me, the most interesting person in the room is Jack Swarbrick because he was with the working group. He and Greg Sankey went through with Thompson and Bowlesby, had that quote-unquote the green light to go trying to put this thing together. What makes sense? They looked at, you know, dozens upon dozens upon dozens of models, and they came up with this. Jack Swarbrick is also tied into the ACC, obviously not with football and hockey, but everything else. And to me, he's like the ultimate wild card in all of this. And like I said, they're all going to eventually get this worked out at some point in time with expansion because it's inevitable it's going to happen. But I find it fascinating that Swarbrick can basically wear two hats, if that makes any sense here. And he, to me, is like the ultimate wild card. He can talk about ACC, but yet he can also talk about expansion. Hey, it makes sense for me from a football perspective if we go to 12. And we said this before, the larger the college football playoff number goes to, the better it is for Notre Dame as far as, number one, the path to the playoff and the pressure of not having to commit one way or the other, whether it be to the ACC or anybody else or any other league, to join in football. So to me, Swarbrick is like the ultimate wild card in all of this conversation.
Well, Jim Phillips was asked on the call, are you trying to put the brakes on this in order to use it as leverage to get Notre Dame into the ACC as a full-time member in football? And he said, no, that's absolutely not true. I don't think the ACC has any leverage right now. I think Notre Dame has all the cards in their hands and can figure out whatever is best for Notre Dame. Kind of like the way it's always been for Notre Dame. And the fact that this format will benefit Notre Dame in terms of not just the playoff, but financially as well. And that's one of the other things that they have to continue to work through is the revenue sharing, the finances, because when they want to take this into the open market in the next contract, they want to have multiple broadcast partners. And ESPN is well aware of this. The commissioners have been on record as saying they want to be able to get multiple networks to broadcast in order to increase whatever revenues are going to be coming in. And Jack Swarbrick is just sitting there and be like, whatever it is, we're going to ultimately benefit, knowing that whatever decision Notre Dame makes may ultimately hurt the ACC in the long run. But his interest is Notre Dame first and foremost. And I think a 12-team playoff format benefits Notre Dame to remain an independent and not have to join another conference.
Andrea, I want to follow up with this. The bulk of the NCAA convention in Indianapolis is going to take place today and tomorrow and about a half day, three quarters of a day on Thursday. Is there anything in your mind that's going to come out of the next two and a half, two and three quarter days that is going to impact the college football playoff or the landscape of college athletics as we know it?
Unless the NCAA somehow changes its longstanding history and makes some sort of radical decisions over the next 2 to 3 days about what this organization is going to look like into the future, then it's hard for me to see how anything over the next couple of days affects the next round of discussions that the commissioners are going to have, because it feels as if Jim Phillips is entrenched in his stance about what needs to happen. They want this 365-day review of college football to happen first. And he's saying that the other commissioners know that this is what his position is. Maybe nobody agrees with him, but I don't think he's suddenly going to change his mind, especially after he just was so public about the ACC's position. Wouldn't it be a little strange that things would change right away after a few days of an NCAA convention that they'd get on board with a 12-team expansion in a few weeks? I'm not sure how anything that's talked about is going to change, because changing the NCAA constitution and whatever governing process is something that is going to take some time. And it's not just going to happen over the next couple of days in Indianapolis during the NCAA convention. So I remain skeptical that we're going to have an agreement for the final 2 years of the contract, as long as the ACC believes this is the position that it has to take.
I think you're 100% accurate with that. And by the way, with that one earring, I can't help but think that you're the first pirate to ever appear on Packer and Durham after 545 shows.
Arg, fellas, arg!
Oh, my gosh. See there, I knew it. See, I knew you'd play along. I knew you'd play along, Adelson. I knew it. Always great to see you. Thank you so much. Appreciate your time, your contribution to this. And, man, I can't. We're going to get to the spring, and it's just going to be open phone America on some of this stuff. I mean, it's just going to be all over the place by the time we get to May. Andrea, thank you. Appreciate it.
So long, mateys.
This is a trip.
All right. On the other side, Reese Davis visited PAC yesterday on Channel 84 on Sirius XM's Off Campus. You'll hear some comments from that. Infamous ACC index card potentially in the offing ahead of some games tonight. And more coming up on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
And Durham on a Tuesday. Many thanks to Andrea Adelson, who just joined us. Got her thoughts on all the stuff going on with the college football playoff expansion. Wes, yesterday on Martin Luther King Day, Reese Davis, who normally joins me every Monday on Off Campus, did so. We talked a lot of hoops, but we got into football. And Reese gave his thoughts on the college football playoff expansion and what it means to the world of college football.
I would say that you play your best cards, right, in order to put yourself in the best position. So I don't know that it's at a screeching halt. It has certainly hit a roadblock, and I was told by many people, as has been reported publicly, so it's not some big secret, but people that were in the room, that not much got done in terms of progress during those meetings. Everybody's trying to protect their own best interest, and I don't think that you have a bunch of people in that room who are oblivious to the fact that they need to do what's best for the sport, but they have a charge that first and foremost, they have to protect their members and their constituents in the way that they think is best. And that's a tough thing to balance. I sort of think that's where GM is. Their media rights deal won't come up for quite some time. They weren't, in the strongest of positions in terms of on the field. And, I know Jim pretty well, and I find him to be an honest and an honorable man. I think he was just saying what he thought, and I applaud him for that. I don't think that's the way it's going to go. But at the same time, multiple things can be true, right, Pat? I don't necessarily agree with him that the time is not right, but I do very much agree with him that there are many, many other issues that need to be resolved. And, you know me, Pack. I'm not a huge expansion guy. I've liked the fact that it's difficult to get into the playoff, but I also recognize the impact on the postseason, on the perception of the postseason, on the players' engagement in the postseason. All of those things, I think we've sort of hit a critical point, and it's probably time to expand to address those things. But Jim is right. There are many other things that need to be addressed in the sport to try to make it as healthy as possible. And the one thing, Pat, that I'm really going to pound the drum on, from what I understand, the talk is that if there is an agreement, that the notion is to push the season deeper into January in terms of when the semis and the championship game will be played. That's the wrong direction. They need to shorten the gap. That's going to help the overall product. It's going to help the placement on the calendar. It's going to allow them to have huge games on New Year's Day, and the semifinals should be on New Year's Day, period. Whatever else has to happen regarding the Rose Bowl, whether they always have a semi, whether they pay for that, whether they move their time slot, whether they bookend the games around the Rose Bowl, whatever it takes. Semifinals have to be on New Year's Day. That's best for the sport. And then you figure out what's best for the championship game. But that's the wrong direction, going deeper into January. You need to move it into December. And that, I hope that that will be the decision that the folks who are making these plans and building the structure, I hope they arrive at that conclusion once that time comes.
Wes, okay. I think Reese is right as far as, I mean, if you push the college football playoff further into January, I don't think that's a good idea at all. I agree with him.
No, I'm totally with you on that. Couldn't agree with Reese more. Two thoughts that come to mind here. Okay, we're talking about one of the conversation points continues to be the number of games, and that's not going to change until somebody can show you what it looks like over the calendar, right, Pac? I mean, and somebody's going to have to get public with the calendar talk, and the calendar talk is backing it up into August, because Reese is right. You cannot continue to push it to January. Why is that? Because the National Football League's not coming off their plan. And you and I have had that conversation about the National Football League pushing the Super Bowl an extra week now, what it does to – basketball, and you don't want college football to be a February sport on the national landscape. You don't want the two playoffs going head to head, right? I think we both agree with that, don't we?
Yep, 100%.
Yeah. So college football needs to back up. It doesn't need to push forward. So when it backs up into August. Now, there are going to be some people that don't like the fact that week zero becomes, rather than the occasional, Fresno State UConn game or whatever it was we had this year, the three or four games played, you're now going to have like almost a regular schedule of games. And week zero will become a real deal. And it may be that the week before that becomes a real deal. And the mechanics of the calendar need to be ironed out. That's the number one thing that needs to happen. Because here's the deal. Every player, every football coach, and you know how coaches are from a ritual standpoint and a in a way they like to lay things out and know things. You know, the 11th practice of the preseason is going to be at 2 o'clock this and at 3:15 that. We've got to get the calendar done as much before anything else in this process to determine what 12 looks like. The other aspect about this is that calendar, in some ways, and Reese is right, as I said a moment ago, by January 1, but in some ways that calendar is going to be dictated by television. And we got to be ready for that, because multiple television partners are going to want to say in New Year's Day. You can write that part down. I think you agree with that too.
TV writes the check. The dude that writes the check gets to pick. That's how it works. Now, you may not like it. Well, guess what? You're not going to do anything about it. That's the way the world works. It's funny, Wes, about 4 or 5 years ago on the radio show, I came up with a thing called the Pac-Man plan, all right? And I may have to go through my old notes and pull this thing back out. And I said that we should start the college football season in the middle of August. And the reason for it is it lays out additional open dates during the season to allow kids to heal up. And folks are ready for football in August. I mean, I can tell you, we go through it, whether it be here on ACC Network or on Sirius XM. Man, people, by the time we get to the media days in July, people cannot stand it. It's like, man, I've got to get my football fix ASAP. You want to go play that FCS game? I think you should. August 15th. Maybe you get a week after that. You get a weekend off. Maybe it's the Labor Day weekend. Folks can go and enjoy themselves and all that stuff. I think there's a way to incorporate a college football season where you still play 12 games. You still have the college, you still have your conference championship games. You can even have an expanded college football playoff, which starts earlier in December, as Reese pointed out. But your season starts in the middle of August, and you get 3 or 4 open dates. It allows folks to get healthy and a time to get away from the game if necessary. I came up with that thing like 4 years ago and laid it out. And Army, Navy at the end can still be on its own separate island because it's a unique game. You're not going to take away the conference championship games. They're making too much money for everybody. You can still have an expanded playoff that doesn't start December the 29th. It can start December the 15th. You know, everybody always worries about, well, exam schedule. It was amazing how we went from, well, exam schedule, we can't do it. Guess what? We can work around that easily. You're only talking about 12 teams that got to deal with it. Only 12. That's it. Doesn't change anything. So I think it's all doable within the calendar. You just have to get a little creative. But pushing it back into late January is a mistake. That's a problem.
No, I totally agree with you. I think there's a lot of things you can do, but one of the things you can't do is dig deeper a hole in January. I think that is a major mistake on a lot of fronts. And for those who are thinking, well, I don't necessarily think I want the college football season to start in August, I would offer you this from a television perspective. The only thing on television in the month of August that would impact anything related to football might be, and I mean might be, packing, you know where I'm going with this, is Major League Baseball. Maybe. And Major League Baseball right now has got its own issues. So actually backing it up into August helps college football, because the NFL is not going to come off their structure. They're going to play preseason games, be it 3, 2, however many they play. So really, college football has a chance in the month of August to take all the eyeballs of sports if they want to.
Yeah, and I don't want to hear people complain about, oh, you can't do that. Well, you know what? March Madness, as much as we love college hoops in these parts,
is in April.
Right. How often have we finished March Madness in March? You go back and give me the year that happened. It is now eked into April, right? The first week, sometimes even a week and a half into April. So I don't want to hear about it. The way we watch television, the way we watch sports is always changing.
Yep.
And I think football today has never been stronger, whether we're talking about the National Football League. And I know they had their super wild card weekend. They had 6 dogs. I mean, you're talking about college football playoffs being boring. The NFL, but guess what? The numbers are going to be through the roof because it's the NFL. People love football.
Yep.
And college football, the same deal. You know what? We had, what, 22 million eyeballs watching Georgia-Alabama last week. Football runs the show in this country. And the more of it, the better.
Yep.
That's just the way it works. It's the reason we've got 40-some-odd bowl games. So I'm just telling you, that's business.
There you go.
That's ESPN doing a smart business deal. That's college football. It's for the fans and everything else. So don't tell me it can't work if the season started, as opposed to August 30th, it started August 15th, and you're able to incorporate multiple open dates throughout the course of the season. Folks would go for it because people are clamoring for football in the middle of July. When they get a dose of ACC, SEC, Big Ten, Pac-12 media days, and now you get to see the coaches and the players, man, you can hear it. Even when I put it to a radio show, you put the headphones on, people are just salivating, going, oh my God, I can't wait. Only 6 weeks of the season starts. I wish it started tomorrow. Hey, it will not surprise me if the real smart people figure out the calendar, Wes, because I do think the season can start in the middle of August. I really do.
No question. We may even go back and have you dig up the old Pac-Man plan here before
the weekends.
That might be fun to do.
And I did this like in 2017 and did an entire radio show on it. And I said, listen, I'm going to spend 45 minutes breaking this down. And then you guys out there in radio land can rip it apart. It was amazing. People were like, daggone, Pac, that kind of makes sense. I said, this is not that hard. It's really not that hard. I know the contracts are difficult, but the concept is not that hard.
Well, speaking of ripping things apart, when we come back, you're going to be free to judge this. The Packer and Durham mid-season All-ACC team. Oh, yeah. You betcha. We got some rules and regulations and some other ideas, too, coming up next on ACCN.
Packer and Durham. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Hey, don't forget, we got ACC Women's Hoops coming up for you Sunday. How about this? 2 o'clock presented by Food Lion. Wake Forest visits number 3 Louisville. Then at 4 o'clock, Kenny Brooks takes the Hokies on the road. Wes Moore and number 4 NC State waiting. Remember now, these are the games following the big Thursday night showdown. We got them for you Sunday right here on ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app.
Okay, it's time for the official, unofficial midseason awards. Wes, you ready for this? Because once social media gets a load of this, this will be ugly. This will be an ugly mess. Be I-85 on a winter storm is what this is going to be.
Yeah. How about if how about when we name the Packer and Durham All-ACC midseason, when it ends up in somebody's game notes? That's what we're looking for, isn't it? Really? That's kind of program promotion we need, don't you think? Game notes.
I think that if the really talented SIDs, and we are loaded with them in this conference, if they have to stoop to such levels to include our list here, then they're just looking to like maybe fill up the entire – maybe they got like 3/4 of a sheet of notes, and they're like, too much white at the end. Let's just slap Packer and Durham's list on there just to fill up some space. I think they can probably come up with better stuff than we will. But nevertheless, we're going to try it. We're going to give this a whirl and see where it goes.
In no particular order, ladies and gentlemen, here are the 5 guys. Now, Mark and I came up with 5, and it just so happened we have the same 5. So here we are. Here are the 5 All-ACC Packer and Durham mid-seasons. That makes sense? Let's start with Armando Bacot, coming off back-to-back 29-point games for the Tar Heels. Armando Bacot makes this. He is also 7th in the league in scoring. He's 1st in rebounding, and he is 3rd in field goal percentage. So congratulations to Armando Bacot for making the Packer and Durham All-ACC list there, Pac.
No-brainer.
I mean, he's actually moved up to –
I think these 5, quite frankly, are no-brainers, but I'm sure there'll be folks in the ACC footprint that are going to say, these guys are idiots on television and radio. What are they talking about? How could they leave off fill in the blank? But believe it or not, our 5 matched. Yeah. So take it for whatever it's worth.
2nd on the list is Darion Sebron of NC State. He is 2nd in the league in scoring and in rebounding. He is 5th in field goal percentage, and he is 10th in assists, Pac. My goodness, top 10 in 4 categories in the ACC.
having a great year, and more importantly, will be joining us in 45 minutes on the show making his debut. How about that?
Yeah. Third on the list, Alondis Williams of Wake Forest. The Oklahoma transfer has come in, and he is the conference's leading scorer, and he is the conference's leading assist man for Steve Forbes' Wake Forest team.
I mean, what else do you want? 31's balling, man. He's been fantastic.
There he is. Yep, he is. He has been spectacular for the Deacs. You say, well, wait a second. We've gone Carolina. We've gone State. We've gone Wake. What about Miami? They're having a great run. You're right. They are. And the leader of the Hurricanes, in our opinion, has been Cam McGusty. McGusty averaging 18 points, 6 rebounds, and 2 assists. That's 5th in scoring and 10th in rebounding. And seemingly when they need big shots, he's the guy.
No doubt. And again, Baycott, McGusty, you'll see them tonight, eyeball to eyeball, Miami and North Carolina. What will be, like I said, athletes all over the place and two really confident players and teams getting after.
And the 5th and final player on the midseason All-ACC first team for Packer and Durham is the Seattle freshman Paolo Banchero of Duke, who has had just a phenomenal year, 6th in scoring and 6th in rebounding, averaging 18 points, 7.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists per ball game as well. So congratulations to those five guys for making the All-ACC team. Now, I will say this, Mark. The five, is it easy to pick five? It's difficult because you've got Wendell Moore's had a great year for Duke. Caleb Love's had a great year for Carolina. You got individual guys like John Hughley of Pittsburgh having an outstanding year. So it's not the given that everybody thinks it is when you try and formulate a top five.
Well, we'll find that on social media. Believe me, you'll see all the list of players and how dare you guys leave off so-and-so. But these were our five. And you know, you put a list together, I put a list together. Doesn't happen very often, but we were in total agreement. So that's the first sign that we got it wrong. That's the first sign we got it wrong. So we'll see where it goes.
All right. Now, if you're going to pick a player of the year, Mark, who are we going with here?
For me, it's Baycott. And I'm just going to get everybody's schedule is different. So I'm going to go with ACC games only. The dude leads the league in scoring, leads in rebounding, and first in field goal percentage. So I'm going to go Baycott. He has been unstoppable lately. And I just don't know. Again, we've not seen Duke Carolina play yet, and Mark Williams has been a force inside. But Baycott's numbers, man, every weekend, 29 and 21 against Virginia, 29 and 12 over the weekend against Georgia Tech. I've just been really, really impressed. He's been terrific.
I will tell you this, and again, I'm of the place where you have to look at how – I remember when Eric Green led the nation in scoring at Virginia Tech. And I'm going to take Darion Sebron for this reason. He is top 10 in 4 categories. He is top 5 in 3. I mean, he's 2nd in scoring, 2nd in rebounding, 5th in field goal percentage, and 10th in assists. I mean, the guy is impacting the game everywhere for NC State. Now, I agree with Baycott. I see the argument and the discussion for Banchero. But to me, Sebron at this point in the first half of this season has been as singularly talented as anybody the league has seen.
Terrific, right? And again, we're going to talk to him coming up here at 9:30 this morning on the show. We look forward to it. But he has been terrific. I think you can get into a healthy debate on this topic based on here we are on January the 18th, which we just did. And again, you can do this at home, amongst yourselves at a bar, the neighborhood, whatever the case may be. But, you know, have at it. Again, this is all I'm sure going to be on social media and folks will go nuts on it.
All right. When we come back, in case you missed it from yesterday, Darian Rencher joined us, the Clemson running back who just finished his career. His impact across that Tiger campus felt in so many different areas. He joined us yesterday to talk about not only Martin Luther King and the holiday, but also the potential expansion of the college football playoff. Old 21 from T.L. Hanna and Anderson returns to Packer and Durham next.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
You got ACC Network is your home for great basketball, a triple header for you on Saturday. We get you started at 4 o'clock, presented by Subway. Virginia visits Raleigh to see NC State. Pittsburgh is Clemson. At Clemson is the 6 o'clock game. And then in primetime, off to the Joel Coliseum for North Carolina and Wake Forest. All for you here on ACC Network, all streaming live on the ESPN app.
Looking forward to all of that. Darian Rencher joined us yesterday, yep. Wes, and I've said it before. If I was a company, I know he wants to try the professional football route, but if I was a corporation, I would have hired this guy yesterday. He is a smart, smart, classy dude, man. Always love having him on the show.
Yep, we started our visit with D. Wrench yesterday by asking him, what does ML King do?
I don't think the goal is to necessarily replicate exactly what he did, but to take like the core of his message of just loving peace. Then, like I said, like making positive change in the community and going about it in a way like, and then he faced a lot of adversity, but he saw it through and he saw a lot of change during his life. And exactly, I mean, more so after his life, you've seen the results of what he stood for. And so for me as a young person, I think just to, it's a message to anyone everywhere that ultimately you have an opportunity to stand up for what you believe in, to make a difference and to create positive change. And not everyone's going to be in the spotlight per se, but we all have a like opportunity for sure in our daily lives to impact the people around us for the things that matter most.
Darian, you know, I've said this to you before on the show, but when we went through about a year and a half, 2 years ago, whatever the date was, I don't have the exact date, but it was the middle of summertime.
Right.
And you were a member of the football team. There were a number of members of the football team that said, hey, listen, we want to have an event on campus and we want the community to come out. And you tied it in with the police officers and the local business folks and the local townspeople and students and players and fans. And I drove from Charlotte down to Clemson because I wanted to see it. I just was really captured by you guys taking an ownership of it. And I've told you this before. It was one of the most important days I've ever spent on that campus. And I'm a proud alum and been there a gazillion times for football games and basketball games and baseball games and golf events and so forth. But I thought that was one of the most important days that I can think of in the history of the institution. And all of you guys took ownership and you got on the stage and you got to the microphone. And one of the things I will never forget is you asking the crowd, and there were thousands of people in Bowman Field. And you said, how many people have ever been to an event like this? Raise your hand. And I was blown away by, I would say, 80 to 90% of the people there raised their hand.
Right.
And it was so emotional. Like you really felt like, you know what? This was the place to be, to do something. I mean, whatever little item it might have been to make life better, to treat people with respect. And, you know, it's one thing to talk it. It's another thing to walk it. And I think that's the one thing I've always respected about you and those guys on that stage and that team and that community, because it was cool. You really felt like this positive vibe that, you know what, we can be better as people. And so to tie it in with this particular day, you talking to us, I want to give you a ton of props for that and all the guys that were involved. I know you weren't the only guy that spoke. Right. But it was a really, really powerful message. And this is the day I'm talking about right here. It was really, really cool.
Yeah, I definitely would say it's one of my most memorable moments in my Clemson career. Won a lot of games, won some national championships. But this day in particular definitely stands out amongst the rest just because of what it meant as a man and for what it meant for my university. And so for me to, like you said, to be a part of that, along with so many other guys who had the courage to speak up and speak out, means the most. And I think the message in that, like that was just a moment, but hopefully it inspired people in their daily lives to really make a difference each and every day. Because obviously you can't do that every single day, but hopefully just that moment would encourage all of us to make a difference. And so that's what's done for me, even just seeing the ripple effects from that moment of obedience throughout the past couple of years, having different people come to me and my friends and be like, hey, that moment made a difference. Seeing pictures of little kids that probably would think a certain way, but now have a different perspective because we were examples to them, or seeing older people that were set in their ways be changed by that moment. And so it's just powerful. And I think the message always is, you said something that really, there's a quote that I like a lot. It talks about it's not one thing or one person that makes a difference, but it's all the things and all the people that make the difference. And so as I step out, hopefully other people continue to step out. And I've been encouraged by other people. Hopefully I can be an encouragement to people as well.
Darren, we wanted to have you on for two reasons, obviously that being one of them. The other is this. I don't think there's anybody who can speak to the college football expansion question. And what Commissioner Phillips said the other day about we got to look at the health and safety. We got to look at a lot of things before we expand the college football playoff. One of the things is the ACC stance against playoff expansion. One of them is nobody's talked about the schedule. Nobody's talked about health and safety. As a guy who played on five college football playoff teams, what can you speak to on this? I mean, we've heard that Clemson was one of several schools in the ACC that was opposed to the original expansion idea. I mean, take us through what we might be missing here or not thinking of as folks who cover it but don't play in it.
Right. So I think the initial thought is that seasons are long. And unlike the NFL, you don't really have a downtime once the season is over. And so just playing through five playoffs, like the season ends in January at some point, and you go right into spring ball. So I think it's a long season. Maybe the first thing to consider is what game would you cut out in order to make the playoff expansion possible? So that's something to consider. And then, honestly, this year has given me great perspective more than any other year, because every year we've been in the playoffs besides this year. And I used to always say, man, it doesn't matter if there's only four teams. Like, it's only four good teams. But being on the other side, it would be cool to possibly get some of the teams in there, because it would have given us some more hope this year towards the end. So who knows? I'm kind of 50-50. I do think, just like you saw in the playoffs in NFL, that there are elite teams. Everybody thinks they're elite, but there are a couple of elite teams every year. And I've experienced that the past couple of years, because there's always a team in there that gets blown out. And then there's like two good teams that end up playing for a championship. And so
right.
I do think less is more sometimes, but at the same time, if they could figure it out, I just don't know how they would do it. Would they have a bye week for the first team? Who knows? But I can see expansion going well too, but there definitely has to be some consideration for, like you said, the number of games and then how you see the teams and who gets what. I think the timeline matters. This thing can't go into like February playing games just because a lot of guys will see it as like this hinders my opportunity to go play professional ball. So I think some people really have this consideration. I think they need to involve some players. But I think it is doable. I can see it being good for a lot of fan bases. But the logistics of it have to really be considered. And then here's a key question for you guys. Like, so we play two games every year that help smaller schools make money. So do we cut out those games in order to have a potential playoff expansion? Then what happens if you cut a game and you don't make it to the playoffs? So I don't know. Like, it's a bunch of questions to be asked and to be answered, more so to say.
Sharp dude right there, man. Always like having Darian on the show. He's great.
And I won't Rencher on the round table. I won't Rencher. When we start talking about the playoff and we need to know players' perspectives, I won't Rencher in the room. Pretty simple. I just think that guy brings – he understands the big picture. He grasps it. I mean, think about it. He's the one that said, hey, look, we play two games a year to, you know, help schools. In other words, guarantee games. Do we get rid of those? You can't back the season up into February. What did Reese Davis just say? You can't push the season any further, right, Pac? Same thing.
Well, if I was a company, I'd hire Darian Rencher right now. I don't care what the job description is. That dude right there is going to be incredibly successful no matter what path he goes down. He is when you say student athlete, again, he's gotten 2 degrees from Clemson. He's played sports. He's led social movements and racial inequities and likes to discuss them. Listens. He's a great listener. I would, like I said, I would hire him tomorrow if I was a company. I would. Big time.
All right. When we come back, Power Hour underway with the old adage, does defense win championships? We will talk about that. Plus, Darian Sebron at 9:30 on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham.